Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us on the Patriot Journalist Network. And join us by going to www.patriotjournalist.com and join the Twitter team. And you can also check us out by going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, where you will find some links to some other great websites. As long as on our Give page, you will find a number of very worthwhile charities, such as the Angel Heart Farm and Cancer Free Kids. And for only $10 by texting 80100 as the phone number, and in the text portion, just put in lion, you can send a stuffed lion to a child who was just diagnosed or recently diagnosed with cancer. And of course, there may be data fees that may apply. Maybe not, but check that out as well. And thank you for coming to the show, whether you're listening to it live now or on the archives. You are welcome. And for those who would like to call in tonight and chime in as well, you can at 347-945-7428 and just hit the one on the number dial or to let me know you want in, or you can send me a message on the chat here on the show, or you can also, if you are a Facebook user, chat as well, or also you can contact me through email from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website on the contact page. Tonight we will start out with a very special guest. Some of you will remember him during the IRS scandals, but he's also running for a school board position in a local election, and definitely conservative and grassroots gentleman running, and we'll be talking with him very shortly. And then tonight we will also be talking about some things in the news, such as the latest on the NSA spying on U.S. allies. We also have questions, will this bring our allies against us and turn them towards other nations? Of course, we know Germany is already has shown its eye going towards some of the folks we would consider not very friendly to the United States, including Russia, China, and Iran, and we'll discuss that. And will the NSA spying lead to the destruction of the American and America and her place in the world? Of course, we'll always also discuss the mainstream media's possible turning on Obamacare, which we'll hear some clips tonight from a couple of the Sunday shows asking about that. But without any further ado, I will be letting in our special guest, and that is Justin Benick-Thomas, who is running for a school board position. Welcome you very much. Justin, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, and thanks for coming on. I know we only have a limited time tonight, only about a half an hour. And I want to respect that because I know you've got more campaigning to do because, as we all know, folks, that November 5th will come upon us very quickly, and I'm sure there's still a lot to do. So we'll get right to it. And, of course, as you know, because you've been on the show before, one of the things we focus on here on Bard's Logic is about the grassroots, and you've had some two really great things I'd like you to talk about that shows that you understand the importance of the grassroots. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what are you doing for your campaign there?
Absolutely. So I've worked very hard to try to get out and walk the streets and really understand the needs, the praise and the concerns of people in the neighborhood. And I'm proud to say I've visited every precinct and I've visited every street at this point. And I'm hoping to visit, of course, as many voters as I can in the process. It's really been an eye-opener. It's been very rewarding to see and to hear what people have to say. And hopefully I can use that knowledge and use those relationships to improve our schools and better serve our community.
Ian, I'm looking at your website here, and if you'd like to check it out, it's www.bennickthomas.com. And I do have some of the quotes from the folks that you have there on the website that people put out and we can find here. And we're talking about on your candidacy. It says, I appreciate that you found examples of success that may be applied here for proactive solutions. You've got my support. And also we have here, as a graduate and resident, I know firsthand our schools are vital to and accept the area. I believe the proposals will go a long way to keeping them successful. And then there's also, we have neighbors chime in here, and Darlene puts, I expect officials to be available and accountable. You are both and have earned my vote, Darlene. And also someone put, it's a pleasure to meet you. You are the first to visit here ever. And you just pointed that out, and that is definitely very important, especially if we're going to really get in touch with the people and with the grassroots. Says, we need people like you. And it says, I believe that the students, parents, and homeowners need to have ownership in the schools. Your voluntary funding ideas, alumni associations, and community fund are refreshing. And with that being said, how is your campaign going? And what have you seen locally? We've talked some of this, maybe not about their concerns, but what concerns have you seen from the people on our children's education that they have?
Well, a couple of things have come up. Of course, the taxation is always a concern, and I think that's a fairly common thing across school systems, not unique to my area. It's a large portion of your property tax, and once you get there, there are a lot of fees in order to support your children, and so it really, we look to make an investment in our community, and I don't think anyone questions that, but there's a point where it becomes very difficult, and people start to ask questions about being good stewards of money. Our leadership now has done a very good job at starting to improve that. We just haven't gotten far enough. They've combined some buildings, they've combined some positions, and that's really done a good dent. So I have to give them kudos on the start. But now they've come back to voters and asked for an additional levy, and
mm-hmm.
I would have hoped that we would look a little bit deeper in what we have to try to spend a little bit more wisely. More than half of our line items, when you look at the detailed budget, are changing at a rate of more than twice inflation. And one of them is going nearly 30 times what we spent last year. And that suggests to me that we're not trying very hard to control expenses. It may not solve the problem in its entirety, but my expectation as a taxpayer is that you've done everything that you can before you come to me and ask for more. My proposal for the group and my discussions with the community is that we need to find some voluntary ways to help. The University of Cincinnati at the collegiate level, Walnut Hills High School at the high school level have put together programs that have worked very well and have been on a voluntary basis, and I hope that some of that can be applied here. It may be that it covers some of those extras that become difficult. Maybe we want a new textbook. Maybe we want to send on a special field trip or something along that lines. And those are things that I'd like to be able to offer everybody, and this may be the avenue to let that happen, and it's been done successfully elsewhere. If you look at Walnut Hills, now they've had this for many years, most if not all of my life, but they're at the point now in their foundation where they're actually funding to update and in some cases replace outdated buildings. That would be a stretch goal in the long term. But again, right now, and I think an achievable one, is we can offset against some of those extras. Do I need some new textbooks? Do I need to send somebody for some special training? Do I need to send a class, perhaps an AP class or a government class out of state or out of town to go to something special. Those are important, but those don't necessarily need to be in the base budget. Those should be something extra, and the community is very willing to do that, so long as it's spent wisely and it's spent, hopefully, as voluntary basis as possible.
Well, Justin, it's a national show here, but I think that, those proposals and the things that you're suggesting as well, I think those are things that could be done throughout the nation. I really do. I think, other school, localities and their school boards and what they do at those schools can, and I think they do well if they were to adopt those ideas. So I think it's not just for, locally. I think this could be used across the board. And you talk about spending money. Our federal government doesn't know how to control spending. I mean, that's quite obvious. We got to start somewhere, at least starting at the more local levels. Maybe the federal government learns something from that. But as I said, I just want to reiterate, I think it'd be a good idea if other places, throughout the country adopted those. And speaking of the federal government, one thing we talk about here on the show is about government control. And one of the things that we talk about is government control and influence on local education. If you would like to share any thoughts on that, we'd appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Community by community, look to hire a group of people for school board. Hopefully I'm among those people beginning in the next term. Their expectation is we oversee the needs of the school system. What sometimes is a disconnect is bureaucrats in Washington and also in Columbus, in our case, have put additional rules and mandates in place that sometimes makes it very difficult. The expectation of the community and my desire as a candidate for the board would be that these decisions are made locally for the local district. After all, we live in the district. Many have children in the district are coming through the school system, and it's important that we put together the programs and the services that are helpful to us. Now, certainly there are some academic norms, but those should be driven as locally as possible, certainly not by the central government in D.C. And we're seeing on an increasing basis mandates, quote-unquote, voluntary coming from D.C. With dangling carrots on grants and such, many of them, of course, being upside down in the end. So not only do you lose money, but you lose control, and many systems have fallen into that trap.
And I do see some folks in the chat who have some questions, and if we have some time at the end of the half, of the questions I have here and just some time left, we'll ask them. And because I know we only have a half an hour tonight with them. So our discussion tonight, and I think we will, and I'll go ahead and bring this one in because the next one, what's so you think about some of the topics we have tonight. And one is there an allocated, how much is allocated at present per student in the area? Do you have the information she wants to know, like I guess how many dollars per student is spent?
I don't have those handy. The budget is just over $13 million, $13 million for the district. The state average is in the $10,000 range, and we're pretty on par to that, but unfortunately I do not have a hard number to give you.
Well, that's because it's something that, they brought up, and thank you very much for the question, Vitake, in the chat. And we'll talk about this briefly, because this isn't really what your what you're running for, and that's what we're discussing tonight, but I'm sure my audience will be interested in what your thoughts are on this. And tonight we're going to be talking about Obama's promise to those who were able to keep their health care, and it's not showing to be true, and the NSA spying on our allies. What's your thoughts on those two topics?
To topic one, in terms of many losing their health care, unfortunately, this was fairly predictable. The grandfather clause was written so narrow as to any change would then be applicable for the law, and we know year over year costs increase. even by a penny. And as a result, the mandates would change and the prices would go up in some cases near exponential levels. You know, the 40 percentile seems to be about the norm, unfortunately. So not surprising, although certainly disappointing to hear the same statement on a repeat basis. To point two, related to the NSA targeting, it's disheartening to learn over and over the level. I can't say it's particularly shocking. I'm more concerned with the monitoring of the everyday citizens,
right,
perhaps those in an official capacity, but really none of that is okay. The official capacity, of course, may have a National Security Edge, which is the acronym, but the individuals, the you and me, concerns me greatly. We have a plant that effectively grabs all of the information and has the potential to have a retroactive use, and information, as we all know, taken out of context, as well as, frankly, information maybe it was something discussed that wasn't 100% right, but out of context would be my bigger concern, looking retroactively to create a case as opposed to catching somebody or having somebody create a crime. You know, it's almost like the pre-crime that we see in the movies.
Right. Yeah, I can remember the name of that. And isn't it communication or something of that nature? Or that's kind of part of your expertise, is it not?
Yes, the communications is indeed.
So back to the, I see we got about 13 minutes, and I'm going to bring on one of my panelists here. And since she's got any questions or comments for you, Justin. Cindy, thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys tonight?
Great. I see we only got maybe about 13 minutes left, and so if you've got anything you'd like to add or ask before we go with the final questions, if there's anything else that Justin would like to add in, such as tell us more about his website and what he's doing and where folks can go to check him out, you know, especially folks here locally and what they can do to help his campaign in the final unwinding days and what they could do on Election Day. Go ahead, Cindy.
Okay, I do have a couple things. You know me. I can't keep my mouth shut. So anyway, how about Common Core? Is Common Core already implemented in Ohio? And do you have any way, if you are on the school board, do you have any way of fighting Common Core?
Yes, and yes, unfortunately. Common Core was adopted in a general sense by the state assembly, although there is a strong likelihood that that will be repealed in this session. The bigger risk is the school systems, including where I'm running, who took Race to the Top funds. Taking the Race to the Top funds, they agreed to implement the Common Core standards, and they also agreed to keep certain conditions active. And it was dependent on the grant, but most of them are training programs in perpetuity for a three-year block of money. So there are certain standards that I don't know will be able to go away anytime soon because those were strings attached to a grant.
They have a three-year commitment on that before you could get rid of that.
No, they took money for 3 years, and as a result of 3 years of money, they've committed forever to do certain things.
They're committed forever just because of 3 years' worth?
That's correct.
Even if the state rescinds that or repeals it? Because I know Florida is in the process of repealing their legislation to accept Common Core because we had such an outcry here in Florida that they're backing off on it. I don't know that they've taken money, though. I don't know what their deal is.
Yeah, so part of that will be dependent on the grants. There are a number of grants out there, and I understand there's some flexibility even in writing them. So I don't know what all was won to speak specifically. When you wrote a grant, you agreed to keep those programs forever. You also agreed to bring in the standards. Now, the standards don't necessarily translate to the test in the case of Florida, and if Ohio were to repeal it. There are park assessments that need to be done, and there are certain state-level assessments that need to be done as well. Ultimately, those could get replaced, I would imagine, with something else, but the testing component isn't going to go away. The bigger risk is if the state's volumes, if a majority of states have gone in there, you've got the crony capitalism angle. For example, in Ohio, the only state I can speak to, a lot of the planning was done in relation to an organization. The organization is one of the big two college tests. I don't want to give them positive air here. Their test is now required, both in a certain percentage of the classes as well as effectively a graduation test by their senior year. There's also a website that provides some top-level data that allows them to track their grades and compare different college or trade options against their successes, if you will, owned by the same company. So we have a course load, a test, and a website owned by one of the planning influences that are now required. So the big component is crony capitalism, if you will. That's separate from the control aspect. My biggest problem is this is a central bureaucrat trying to have a big say on a local school, and I feel that the community hires that local school board to do their business, and we're not hiring DC. But I hope that background is helpful for your other question.
Well, yeah, but the standards to me are not the most egregious thing about it. As long as you can meet the standards that they give, then you can go beyond that, can't you? I mean, that's something that if your school board wants to go beyond that, you can. So that doesn't bother me as much as it does.
You can. Let me pause there. You're absolutely right. You can exceed the standards, and I'm not aware of any school who even met the standards. In most cases, the default is so low as to be embarrassing. Even our lowest performing schools in the region, not where I'm running, but in the region, have set their standards higher than the Common Core. What changes is the way that they approach things. There's a lot of peer-led stuff, which isn't inherently a bad thing, but there's less flexibility for the teachers in some cases. There are a lot of students who will absolutely excel in this, but there are a lot of students who have trouble, and the flexibility to move their classroom is less. A lot of the questions are reading and word problems. Again, not bad. You use that in everyday language, but the flexibility in the classroom is less. So these should have already been a part, but we're kind of missing the flexibility of that teacher knowing their classroom and knowing their subject area to grow it in the way that they see fit. And maybe they would come at the same end, but I would like that to be the teacher's decision under the guidance of the administration and the board, not, again, somebody central in D.C.
Okay, well, what we've got going on here in our county is that I just got word from a friend of mine today that her daughter came in and told her, 15 years old, told her they were going to be studying the five pillars of Islam in history. What do you think about that, and is there any way that a school board member can fight that kind of curriculum being in the book, or at least that other religions, namely Christianity and Judaism, would also be added? How about the pillars of Christianity? How about the doctrines of Christianity, or also Judaism?
My understanding is those are not specific to Common Core. It's not that there's a lesson plan that says show the pillars of one religion over another, at least from what I've seen. There are curriculum committees on each school board. They help select the books, and they help approve, at least at a top level, the curriculum that goes through. Obviously, much of that is driven by the administration and approved by the board, but there should be some communication that occurs. There's no reason from anything that I've read that you can't do an all-of-the-above strategy or none-of-the-above strategy if that's where you go. I would hope that these decisions are made for what's appropriate in the community. You know, those sorts of examples can be sensationalized, and people tend to see what they want on both ends, right? Because you're fearful of the control, or you're unhappy with the focus on one over another. So I'm hesitant to take a stance without sufficient information. I can tell you that the boards should have some say over curriculum, as do the administration. If you think of an org chart, your superintendent would be like the chief executive, and the principals would be your operating officers, and your teachers would kind of trickle down below that by department. Your superintendent and your treasurer report directly to the board. So if you don't get the answers you need working up the chain, then you go to the board until you're satisfied. But you've got to give people a chance to make it right. Or at least
explain. That's
time
for one more
question.
You don't
necessarily have to like it, but you certainly need to give them a chance to talk through it.
Yeah.
Well, I know we've got real quick, Cindy, I know we've only got about 4 more minutes left of the time he's going to be able to have with us tonight. So I want to give him kind of the last couple minutes to, you know, tell us how we can get onto his website and any other information you'd like to share for folks, because other folks here in the area will be listening to the show as well. So I'd like for him to be able to share that with people.
Where'd you go?
Go ahead.
Was there another question before I kind of sum? I'm happy to answer one more.
No, you go ahead. I know you got to go.
Okay. Robert, you can share my email with her offline if you'd like to, or share my website.
Yeah, certainly.
Well,
I'll give her your email, and then she can send you the question.
Okay. So I appreciate the time here. The website is www.binickthomas.com, BINICTHOMAS. There are position pieces and stories and quotes along the way, as well as a biography and means to get in touch with me, including my cell phone. So if anybody in the area or anyone who's interested has any questions, I'm available to you. If there is anyone in the general area when you go to the website that has some time to volunteer, either at polls or phone calls or something, that would be helpful as we kind of round these days, these last couple of days through. And if nothing else, please keep me in mind, at least those local, when you go to the polls. And again, my information is here, and don't hesitate to call with any questions or any considerations, good or bad, for the district or particular to my candidacy.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much for coming on tonight, Justin, and good luck. And definitely we'll be keeping in touch as the election gets closer. And I'm sorry, Cindy, for not being able to get that in, but I know he's got other things that he has to get to and engage in, especially as things start winding down. So, definitely, folks, check it out, the website, and that is www.binickthomas.com. If anyone does have any questions that you would like to send to him, you can go to my contact page here on Bard's Logic Political Talk. Go to the contact page, send it there, or I believe you have contact information there as well for the local folks who they can call you as well, correct, Justin?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all on the website if you follow through the top of any given entry, so the above the fold, if you will.
Now, before I miss it, and I know we talked briefly today, and you mentioned about scrolling down something on the website. Did you want to bring that up real quick before we go, or before you go? I thought there's something.
Scrolling down, I think.
I talked about the outline, your key goals.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So included on the website are all the press releases, I believe, in transparency, so not only what was written to the public, but also what was written to the press. That is all available. A link to each of the media appearances and references is included, same rationale. And, of course, just a top-level summary of what I'm looking to help with. And we've kind of covered these in so many words on this message, looking to continue to improve our academic success, looking to improve our fiscal situation, and looking to retain the local control. And we've actually touched on each of those during this call.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you very much for coming in again, and we'll keep in touch. And as I said, good luck on November 5th, and definitely, folks, check out his website.
Thanks for your time.
You too. Take care, Justin.
Take care.
Bye. You too. Bye-bye. Okay, folks, sorry that there was, we didn't get to spend as much time on him. However, we have had him on almost for the entirety of a show some months back when we were covering the IRS scandal, which, of course, many of you may remember that he was at the focal point at the center of that scandal as one of the people who was targeted by the IRS with Justin, and he did spend the whole show with us then for about 2 hours or so. So it is in the archive. So scroll back and check it out. And so we do have someone else on the line you'd like to chime in, and that's 414. Thank you very much for calling in. How are you?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Good. This is? And where are you hailing from?
This is Rob Haynes from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area. I'm a national leader for Overpasses for America.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for calling in. I know we're going to be discussing tonight about two things. We're going to talk about the NSA spying on the Allies. We're also going to talk about the mainstream media, if it's even possible, turning on Obamacare, at least through some of the past Sunday shows, some of the questions, and believe it or not, hard-hitting questions about Obamacare and some of the things that's coming out about this. So first, we'll cover the NSA and the spying on our allies. So, you know, I've got some mixed thoughts on that. I know that the French in particular are doing a lot of spying on us, and I also know that Germany, and this is one of the big controversies that, you know, I'm sure folks have seen in the news, is where they talk about their chancellor, personal cell phone has been listening to, and as Justin mentioned earlier, the biggest concern is through, you know, just the en masse amount of the general public being listened into, which I, of course, have the biggest concern with as well. But, you know, bringing it back to Germany is one of the things that I want to bring up is that, you know, their eye has been turned towards and is becoming an ally for them. China, Iran, and Russia. And so, you know, it's good to keep an ear on that, in my opinion. But, of course, something like this could push them into building a strong alliance with those three nations, thus damaging us, of course, in the world scene. So what do you think about that?
Well, the thing is, NSA is just another prime example with this administration and our federal government out of control. I agree we need to monitor certain things overseas in relations to our national security. But we walk a fine line when doing this with our allies. I do know our allies spy on us. It's been going on for decades. It's part of the nature of the beast, I would say. I just feel that the NSA is out of control because they're doing it to us, we the people in America, and there's no check and balances. Nobody's held accountable. it's just another prime example why we the people need to stand up to take back our government. It's out of control. I'm very emotional about this because I'm a Navy veteran, and I never felt that I would ever see this in America, the last place for individual rights, freedom, and liberty. Everything is just so topsy-turvy, and a lot of this is because we have a person that was elected president, and he has put people in certain positions that will listen to him and obey his command, I would say. And it's all, everything is by design, I do feel.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I actually wanted to bring up tonight is, do you feel that, or think that maybe one of the purposes of the NSA, maybe not, of course, its original purpose, but do you think that because, you know, perhaps some of the people who are involved now, that one of the goals in the NSA is to weaken America?
Well, we all have to go back, and I encourage everyone to read the book of Saul Alinsky, Rule Books for Radicals. And this has been going on for over 100 years, this transformation of America and taking steps to get rid of our Constitution and turn this country into a socialist country. And ever since Obama was elected, everything's been put on warp speed, I would say, to achieve that goal. And they will use every trick in the book to achieve their goal. And we can see the prime example, I don't want to get off topic too much, but this massive train wreck of Obamacare. You know, people losing their jobs, going from full-time to part-time, losing their health care. Individuals that like their health care plans are being dropped now because Obamacare. So with everything going on with our government, I'm frustrated too, and it's hard to come to words sometimes. It's very sad in the state of affairs in our country, and we the people have been asleep for decades and allowed this to happen, and we need to wake up and reclaim our constitutional republic, plain and simple. We're on life support right now. There's tyranny, and we have to stop it.
So what do you think, Cindy?
Well, I agree with all of that he said, and more besides that. He didn't really cover it all, you know. If we don't, I just saw something today where, I'm going to find it because I want to read it to you. It's in the Bible. And I know not everybody here believes in Christianity, but there's some stuff in the Bible that is very appropriate for us at this time. And I think it's the kind of things that our forefathers were thinking about and reading at the time of our revolution. And I think it's worth listening to now. If you'll give me a minute, I'll go find it and I'll bring it to you. It's just a warning for the people, or a, I don't know what to call it. Anyway, I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, anyway, folks, you know, I've been, you know, we've been watching this, and, you know, hopefully more so than watching the World Series. No, I'm just kidding. I haven't watched any of the World Series. I guess there's a lot of folks listening to it tonight. I mean, I couldn't even tell you who's winning, who's in ahead or anything. My wife could tell you, but I probably but anyway, you know, but my point is, as I said earlier, there definitely is a need, and I think you folks would agree, there is a need for a level of, you know, spying, and as you pointed out, it's been going on for decades. And we do have enemies out there. I mean, it is important, but just some of the things I'm saying, and this, I guess maybe I don't want to call it a knee-jerk reaction, but it does beg, you know, the question, you know, is there something that the NSA is doing to try to, you know, bring down America? You know, first we talked about, you know, spying here at home, and then talk about spying abroad with, you know, with, you know, what we just talked about earlier with, you know, with the Germany in France, but yeah, I guess Germany's the big one because they're, you know, talk about the chancellor's personal cell phone being bugged. But one thing I wanted to bring up tonight was about Snowden, you know, the leaker, WikiLeaks, things of that nature. I want to bring the question to you was, you know, some dub him as a traitor, some dub him as a hero. For me personally, the jury's kind of still out because why Russia? You know what I mean? I mean, why he's in Russia right now, whether he's, you know, held up as a prisoner or, you know, maybe he's, you know, in a hot tub with I want to drink a lot or hot, it was a joke, but why is he over Russia? That kind of, I mean, does that cause you any suspicions about what his motives would be for leaking the information out? You know, I guess, you know, at a point I'll play devil's advocate a little bit, but don't that raise some suspicions for you? Or do you think, I mean, why do you think he went to Russia to hide out, so to speak?
Who are you asking?
Oh, the gentleman.
Okay.
Good morning. Rob.
Me?
Yes.
I do consider him a hero, but he went at it the wrong way because he did go to China and he's in Russia now. But I think he did that because he did fear for his life and persecution from the Obama administration. Just look at some of the examples. President Obama has been replacing high-ranking officers in our military and putting different officials in the leadership positions in our military. He's also making sure the people that were over in Benghazi, they have to take weekly lie detector tests, and they're kept from testifying on Benghazi. And that puzzle is starting to bust open. As if anybody's seen that article on 60 Minutes on CBS on Sunday exposing Benghazi some more. That little shield is starting to crack and open up. And other examples where people are suspended temporarily and they come back and they get a promotion and bonuses. No one is held accountable for their actions. But I think Snowden is a hero. He just did it the wrong way. I would have thought he would at least go to one of our allies for safety and asylum or whatever. Going to our enemies is not the right approach. Because I do feel he probably has given up some other secrets to them so he can stay there on that condition to stay there for asylum. But if he did not do that, we the people would not know some of the things that have been exposed. And
well, yeah, that's certainly. I mean, I think with the spying on the people and the folks, I think that's important. I think that's definitely something that needs to come out. No, I agree with that. But I'm just wondering, you know, the other things, you know, some of the other national things that actually I believe could, you know, affect national security. You know, I think he just put it all out there when I think he should use some more discretion.
Totally agree. You know, I just think his approach was the wrong one. He should have used other avenues to expose Obama's administration. But it's what it is what it is, and how we the people deal with this information and move forward of making a strong case that Obama needs to be removed from office and we need to get control of our federal government. I'm all for national security and keeping we the people safe and secure. But we have to remember that our government is a constitutional republic. And we have to follow the Constitution. Every letter in that Constitution we need to follow to the T. We need to reclaim our Constitution. That's what I'm kind of feeling about this.
I have a different theory about why he went to Russia.
Yeah, what's that, Cindy?
Well, I think that maybe he went to Russia because they are Obama's enemies. I think he thought they were Obama's enemies. But I think once he got there, he realized that Obama is more in bed with the Russians than he thought. And then he was in trouble. But he did do a deal with the Russians in order to save his skin. But that was because he realized that he had gone to the wrong person. But you got to think of it this way. Well, he certainly couldn't go to a Muslim nation, right? Because we know that Obama's friends with all them. He couldn't go to Europe because Europe is basically doing the same thing that Obama is. And I'm talking about the leadership now. The leadership.
He could go to like Brazil, or something like that, or. I mean, through my understanding, doesn't Brazil have some of the hardest extradition laws in the world that they want to charge him with anything?
But if you'll recall, just recently, Brazil has sided with Obama on a few things, and they're starting to go the way of what's his name in Venezuela that died. They're starting to go the way of Venezuela. They're pulling away from freedom there in Brazil, too. So if I was looking around the world for some place to go, I might have thought of doing the same thing that he did, just assuming that because of, the wall falling down, that Russia was a nice place to go now. But it's just not.
In my opinion, I still think they have elements of the KGB and folks of those still wielding, you know, some power, but definitely
sure
behind the scenes there. No, they're still vying for to get their power back, certainly, but they're just finding different allies. Well, such as look at Russian and Iranian relations. I mean, that's kind of the whole point of of this part of the discussion tonight. Is that, look at the different alliances that are building. You have, Russia, kind of looking towards, allying, not making any kind of, bones about it, so to speak, with China and with Iran. And even Germany is starting to, get more comfortable, get more buddy up with Iran and China and Russia. So, Germany, who was supposed to have been our, our biggest ally for decades, starts to turn away from us. I mean, I think this could, with the chancellor, could have hurt us. But the thing is that is information that we need to know, if Germany's starting to, turn away, and its support for the United States. I mean, don't you think?
Yeah, I think we need to know that. And I think it's silly to think that they're not spying on us. I think it's silly to think that all those
certainly they are.
There's spies all over the place. We just happen to get caught. That's all. Everybody's spying on us. We're spying on everybody. And that's because you can't trust anybody in this world today. You don't know who's doing what. So naturally we're spying on them, and naturally they're spying on us. It's just a matter of we got caught. And unfortunately, the NSA can't be trusted, so you don't know whether they did it for us or against us. You know, we don't know what the motives of the NSA are all the time.
Well, what about Obama saying that I didn't know? How could you be the president of the United States? How could you be the commander-in-chief and be like, I didn't know they were doing that? Really?
That is their mantra. Deny, deny, deny. That's their mantra. It's been happening since, you remember Hillary and Bill and their investigation. I forgot. I cannot recall. I don't know. You remember those answers?
Yeah, deniable plausibility. Or plausible deniability, that's what I was wanting to say. But we do have somebody else who'd like to chime in. It's a dear friend of ours, and it's good to hear from him again. And so also another one of our panelists here on the show, and that is Kelly Mordecai, author of The Hidden Fourth Branch with the website of the same name. Welcome very much, Kelly, to the show. It's great to hear from you. How are you, bud?
Hey, doing good. I just, my son is second grade, a little flag football game. It was a kick. He was the center. He's the hog. He's the smallest on the team. But he ran the ball a couple times. It was hilarious.
good to hear from you, Kelly.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, good to be with you folks. I was listening to a radio report today about the spying stuff in another country. Oh, yeah, Germany, like how many more countries. And they found out through Edward Snowden, and, of course, the Germans were just furious. And, of course, they interviewed the NSA. Oh, no, we don't have all sorts of bits of information on American people and Germans. No, we don't have that. Okay, denial. So the question here is, who are the American people going to believe? Edward Snowden, who fled for his life, or the standard mantra of the NSA? Who are the American people going to believe, one guy or the NSA?
I'm certain that he would be more believable than them. I don't pretend. I just think that, you know, he may have said too much. I mean, I think he carried it too far, and, you know, and just going to China, and I understand what you're saying, Cindy, but going to China and Russia, I don't know, it just makes me, I mean, because let's think about it, guys and girls. I mean, they would love to get a hold of the information that guy has. I mean, I can't imagine, what kind of government officials, and we can't be so naive and think that no one from Russia has had a conversation, if not more, if you know what I mean, with Mr. Snowden.
He's young, and you can't call him wise. He's very intelligent, yes, but he's not. You couldn't call him wise.
Well, there's one thing I would like to throw out there that, yes, of course, I think it's a good idea to have intel, that's CIA, intel what's going on around the world. Had we had better intel and listened to it, we wouldn't have had Pearl Harbor and World War II. So on one hand, and all these nations do to each other, to what level, of course we won't know because it's secret operations. But when you start spying on Americans and abuse this, it's a real problem. You know, and again, I said this before in the show, we have a mechanism to spy on potential criminals in this country. It's called a Fourth Amendment warrant, where you go in front of a judge.
Very good point.
Yeah, and, So there's 20 terrorists, potential terrorists from the FBI or the CIA or whatever alphabet soup agencies you want to think about. That's fine. You got a list of 20. The guy behind you's got a list of 20. The guy behind you's got a list of 20. The judge can go through all these, and oh, wait a minute. The judge got busy all of a sudden because he's kind of protect our Fourth Amendment rights. Well, should we start the NSA and the DHS and da-da-da-da-da? Should we do all that? We could just simply hire more judges. Wow, what a concept. And we would still be under the provisions of the Constitution and the people would be protected. I mean, on the other hand, these days, you know, I've heard these stories of DHS people writing their own warrants. I mean, I thought about opening up a store in Washington, D.C. It's called the Write Your Own Warrant Store. You just come in, you pick up the form, you know, you take the form, you fill it out. I mean, I would sell these forms. You know, I mean, I think they'd be selling like hotcakes these days. Anyway, I got to throw humor in every now and then,
certainly.
Robert, because if I don't, I'm going to go crazy, the stuff I'm learning, finding out, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, you know, the Write Your Own Warrant Store. We got this form.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're on DHS.
I got
one. Yeah.
I got a warrant for almost everybody up there.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you're not with DHS, you're NSA. Oh, I'm sorry, you can return, I'll give you your money back, and then I'll give you the right form if you want, you know. CIA, FBI, this is out of control.
Yep.
Totally agree. So what do you think, and I'll bring this to Rob first, what do you think should be done with it? What can be done about it? I mean, you know, now people know they have the information. I mean, let's be honest. We knew, you know, that there's been a certain amount of spying. We might not have known as much on that we're being spied on, you know, the American people, and it sounds like the citizens of other countries. But what do we do about it? Now that the information's out there, now it's been exposed, what are we going to do with it? What do you think we should do with that information, Rob?
Well, the first thing we need to do is get accountability and hold individuals responsible. And that does include the president. I'm sick and tired of him, along with other officials in his administration, that keeps on saying, oh, I didn't know about it, I don't know, da, da, da. You know, the same old record over and over again. There needs to be accountability. And I would say anything that violates our constitutional rights in regards to us citizens to come to a stop immediately. In regards to our allies and enemies, there's a fine line with our allies because they do it to us too. But we need to respect our allies, but we continue to spy on our enemies to keep America safe and we the people safe and secure. But I would say there needs to be, people need to be fired, and that does include the president. He needs to be fired. He needs to step down from office, impeach, arrest for treason, whatever you want to call it.
Well, that would take the Congress voting House of Representatives majority passed for the impeachment, which is an indictment, just like in a criminal case. And then the Senate would be the trial with the Supreme Court Chief Justice Robert Kennedy presiding, and upon 2/3, he would be removed. Now that we're talking about the Constitution, I want to read the Fourth Amendment in our constitutional moment here on the show. Da, 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 da. All right, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Fourth Amendment.
Bravo.
Janine, you're going to chime in on something?
No, I was just going to tell you that I found those the stuff I wanted to read to you.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Okay. First one. Okay. All right. Well, let me do this one first. Okay. Here we go. Now, this is Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, and Isaiah is speaking for the Lord, speaking to Israel. And the Lord is saying this about Israel. His watchmen are blind. They are all ignorant. They are all dumb dogs. They cannot bark, sleeping, lying down, loving to slumber. Yea, they are greedy dogs which can never have enough. And they are shepherds that cannot understand. They all look to their own way, everyone for his gain from his quarter. Come ye, say that, say they, I will fetch wine, and we will fill ourselves with strong drink, and tomorrow shall be as this day, and much more abundant. So now if you just replace the word watchman with representatives in Washington, you've got an excellent representation of what's going on with our watchmen. Those guys up there are supposed to be our watchmen, and they are all ignorant, dumb dogs that don't know how to bark. They're laying down, sleeping and slumbering. They're greedy, and they have nothing in their head except their own gain. Okay, now, as far as us is concerned, what do we do? Okay, we can either be lazy and stay asleep, or we can go and do something about it. In Proverbs 6:6, it says this: go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, no overseer or ruler, provides her own meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of this thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come on as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. Okay, so as long as we're, I mean, it's obvious if we don't do something about our watchmen up there, if we don't wake up and start getting active, we've lost the country.
Would anybody else like to go ahead? Would anybody else make comment on that before we move on to our next topic?
Well, I got a couple questions for you with the issue of representation. And by the way, Mike Warrington wants to come on the show. Robert, we got to get him on about representation.
Oh, awesome.
I'll just kind of introduce something. Congress said, I need to find that and read it, but there's a quote by one of the founding fathers. The judges, this is federal, the judges and the executives should be few in number, but the representation should be large and vast in number. They come from the public, they are aware of the struggles of the common man, and they are the best protectorate of the rights of the people. Saying we should have large numbers of representatives. We only have 435 in one house, and then the other house has 100, so you have 535 representing how many? What, 300 million? Now, let's look at the math on that. That's insane. Each one of these people represents millions and millions. So in California, I mean, I want to bring you two comparisons if we're talking about representation and waking up our watchmen. We just need more watchmen. In New Hampshire, they're a very liberty-minded state. The turnover in the state legislature is quite a bit, actually, which is a good thing. They don't have to spend much money on their campaigns. They only have one state house representative for 3,000 people. And they passed a law allowing defense attorneys to introduce jury nullification. This is huge. Anyway, we go to California, we have 40 assemblymen, instead of, you know, representative, they call them assemblymen, to represent was it, 37 million? That's one representative per 930,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's 40 senators. So in the Senate, 40 senators, each one of those represents 930,000 people. And so then you go to the Assembly, where I think there's 80. That comes out to be one per every 435,000 people. It's like,
wow.
Any chance of getting a hold of your state assemblyman? Forget it. State senator? Forget it. And so you wonder why California is so liberal. These people, and the turnover rate in the state house is very low compared to New Hampshire. And we get in laws and regulations. Oh, by the way, in California in 2018, you cannot have lead bullets. Lead bullets are illegal come 2018.
Why? Because they're going to give the person you shoot lead poisoning?
Well, there's certain politicians that have a lead deficiency. That's why they're so weird. And, you know, you kill them.
They can't get the lead up.
Yeah, I think they've been eating a lot of lead paint.
I thought you were referring that they don't have a lot of lead in their pencil. Oh, wait a minute. It's not Bard's Logic Gift Card yet.
Oh, okay. But anyway, it's just point blank spooky how we have so little representation. And they have lost touch.
Oh, certainly. But what's the answer to that? Certainly not more politicians. maybe it's broken down more. I don't know.
Actually, it is. The answer is more representatives in our state houses. So the ratio goes down to something like 1 to 3,000 or 1 to 5,000.
So we split up the pay, too? They each get paid less?
Yeah. I mean, it's a public service, quote, unquote. You know, some of these politicians spend so darn much time trying to raise the money to get reelected next time that they don't, like, oh, what did I come here for? I got lots of money.
Right.
I
agree with more representation. I'm just concerned if we get more politicians, that's more politicians and their families and their pensions that we'll end up having to pay for.
Wow. Well, you got a couple points. We got to bring Mike in, Mike Warnken, because his perspective, he'll answer these questions. He's got charge table figures, graphs. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm blown away by this. And it is a key problem that we're not having enough watchmen, as the lady was pointing out. And they're drunk in the wine of the maddening adultery of power. And the turnover rate is so little. When you have a very high people to representation ratio, but anyway, so I don't know. What's your next topic? Then I might have another one that you guys might be interested in.
Okay, and then trying to pull one of my audio clips, but I will start off with the next topic we're going to talk about tonight is about Obamacare. Now, just listening to some of the, you know, what one would think is, and they are, liberal media, it starts to sound like, is the liberal media starting to turn on, is the mainstream media starting to turn on Obamacare? And just through some of this line of questionings and discussion, I think it bears some looking at and exploring, and let's talk about it. What I'll do is, it's kind of a longer clip, but it's entertaining enough. It's only about 8.5 minutes. But I think it will illustrate with what I'm talking about, and I think it would be a good way to spur the discussion. And I've got a couple more clips to play after that. So we'll turn that on. And, it looks like we accidentally or somehow lost Rob. Hopefully, Rob, you're still out there listening. If you'd still like to chime in on what we're talking about, then go ahead and feel free to call in, or if anyone in the audience who's listening, who'd like to call in and chime in later, you can reach us at 347-945-7428. And so this is David Gregory from Meet the Press talking with Beshear from Governor of Kentucky and the Ohio Governor, Mr. Kasich.
Dan said, of the impact of the president's health care plan around the country. We're going to talk to the CEO of Florida's largest health insurer, canceling 300,000 of its policies just this week. We're going to talk to him in just a moment. But first, I want to turn to Democratic Governor Stephen Beshear of Kentucky and Republican Governor John Kasich of neighboring Ohio. Governors, welcome both. I wanted to talk to you and take this out of Washington because in Kentucky, you set up your own health care exchange. In Ohio, Governor Kasich, you declined to do so, and so the federal government has come in to do that. So let me start with you. The president said there's no excuse for this terrible rollout of Obamacare through the website. Are you as frustrated with how all of this has started?
Governor Kasich?
David, is that to me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, David, I mean, the problem is Obamacare is it doesn't control costs. Secondly, it's going to drive up the costs for the vast majority of Ohioans. It threatens the ability of small business to grow beyond 50 employees. And frankly, what I think it's got to concern everybody, this economy is stalled and people don't know what the future is going to bring. And when people are uncertain about the future, they sit on their wallets. And that's why we're not seeing the kind of economic growth that we need to see. It's so vital to creating jobs here in the state of Ohio.
That's the argument against Obamacare, but Obamacare is here. I'm asking specifically about the damage done by a troubled rollout that you're seeing in your state.
Well, that's got everybody just shaking their heads. And that's like three things. The government almost shut down. Now they're tapping somebody's phone, and now this thing. This is creating an issue of confidence in the minds of the American people and doubt with people around the world, which is really serious. Now, here's what I think, David, at the end of the day. I think people need to sit down. The Obama administration needs to open itself up and figure out how we can get some sort of bipartisan support to move forward. If Steve Beshear and I were sitting in a room, we'd figure out what's good, what's bad, how do we fix it. The problem is in Washington, they talk past one another, and they're so polarized, they can't seem to get anything done. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Governor Beshear, let's start on that beginning point, though. We've got a system that is the law of the land. Republicans, Governor Kasich, don't like it, think it won't work. But for now, this is the plan, and it's not working when it comes to implementation. How disappointed are you with this rollout, where you think you've got a good story to tell because you set up your own exchange?
Well, first of all, David, at 12:01 a.m. on October 1, when our exchange opened up to enrollment, Kentuckians started swarming all over our exchange, all over our toll-free lines, and in about 4 weeks, we've had over 300,000 Kentuckians trying to find out and finding out about affordable health care. We've signed up over 26,000 people so far.
Mostly Medicaid, though. They're mostly getting Medicaid, so it's not the young and healthy people getting the insurance plans that are really necessary to make this system work.
Of the 26,000, 21,000 are in Medicaid, 5,000 are in qualified health plans, but we've got another 10,000 going on to the plans that are in the process of choosing. You know, it's a lot quicker to get somebody enrolled in Medicaid once you find out they're eligible. When you go to the plans, they've got to look at all the details and pick the plans that they want. You know, this is working in Kentucky. We had and have some of the worst health statistics in the country, and it's been that way for generations. The only way we're going to get ourselves out of the ditch is some transformational tool. That's what the Affordable Care Act is going to do for us.
What damage has been done? How frustrated are you at the troubled rollout at the federal level, which is impacting, 36 states that have not set up their own exchanges?
Well, number one, I'm happy about Kentucky. Number two, you know, the thing's not working on the federal level yet, but it's going to. You know, the advice I would give the news media and the critics up here is take a deep breath. You know, this is a process. Everybody wants to have a date where they can declare victory or defeat or success or failure. That's not what this is going to be all about. It took us about 3 years to get Medicare really working the way it should.
Governor, wait a minute.
And this is
going to
work.
The president was the one who said, if this is going to be successful, you've got to get young and healthy people signed up by a date certain or else the model doesn't work to keep premium prices down. Is it the news media doing that, or was it the ones who drafted the law who said this has to happen or else it can't work?
In Kentucky, about a third of folks going on Medicaid and getting qualified health plans are under 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to happen all over this country. People are going to sign up for this. It'll take us a while to get it in process, but I'll guarantee you we're going to make it work because it's good for the American people. It's good for Kentucky.
Governor Kasich, I assume you think there ought
to
be.
Hey, David, you know, one thing I got to tell you.
Okay.
One thing I got to tell you. the rollout is the least of the problem here. I mean, the rollout looks like a disaster, but in my state, most Ohioans are going to pay higher costs. And, in fact, this is not going to control health care costs. Here in Ohio, we have reduced our Medicaid growth from 8 or 9% to less than 3%, and we believe we have to have significant payment reform, that when people do the right thing to drive towards quality and lower prices, there ought to be a sharing of the savings among everyone. I mean, the problem with Obamacare is it doesn't get to the nub of the problem, which is higher health care costs that have been out of control. So that when you roll it out, if it rolled out perfectly, it's not going to achieve what America wants.
But wait a minute, but Governor, you took
here.
On your legislature because you said we need to accept federal money for Medicaid because you said it's, you know, more important when you go to heaven than whether you kept government small was that what did you do for the poor? You seem to be articulating a view that's not just compassionate, but that reflects the belief that the more people you help, that ultimately you can control costs that way. If there's more health care, better health care for more people in Ohio, costs will have to come down. So how are you not in line with what the president believes about the potential strength of Obamacare?
Yeah. Well, first of all, David, as you can tell, I've articulated my opposition to Obamacare. But Chief Justice Roberts gave every state an opportunity to try to get federal dollars to improve Medicaid. Now, we have many mentally ill people in this country who are being treated terribly. We have people who are drug addicted, and drug addiction is in every demographic, every race, every income level. And we also have many veterans who aren't covered. So Ohio gets a good deal. We get $14 billion of Ohio money back to Ohio to deal with some of the most serious problems. And, you know, I'm not going to ignore the mentally ill, and I'm not going to ignore the drug addicted or veterans or very working poor people on my watch. But that doesn't mean I embrace Obamacare because I think it's not right. We have our own program out here that has reduced health care costs. We're involving the public sector, the private sector, in a payment reform that we believe will improve quality and lower cost. That's the direction we ought to be going, not some, you know, laboratory cooked up. I'm convinced the people that created Obamacare never worked in business and probably never spoke to a business person as they were putting this together.
What do you believe, Governor Beshear, is the ultimate future of this program? Does somebody have to get fired before they get it right at the federal government? And to the governor's key point, although you might take on, since there's a lot of remnants of health care that go back to Mitt Romney, who most certainly was in business when he was the governor of Massachusetts, laying out that plan, will prices stay low enough for consumers to justify Obamacare?
Yes. I believe it's going to be
the case. Should somebody get fired for how poorly the rollout has gone thus far?
You know, I'm not going to give the president advice on hiring and firing, but you know what? When things go wrong, like they go wrong in our state, I take responsibility for it, and I fix it. And that's what Secretary Sebelius and the president are doing. They're taking responsibility for a bad rollout of this website. They're going to fix it. Look, this is going to take some time to get done, but everybody needs to chill out because it is going to work. These plans and Medicaid are directed toward prevention and wellness, and that is the future of health care, and I think everybody knows it.
All right, I'm going to leave it there. Governor Beshear, Governor Kasich, a lot more to discuss on this as time goes on. I appreciate your time, both of you, this morning. Thanks very much.
And there you have that. What do you think, Kelly?
Well, I want to look at a bigger picture first. Fox News, by the way, I heard from a reliable source today that there was a confession that there is a clause that we can deny care to people who are elderly. It's kind of euthanasia kind of a thing, but we can deny care, and it's, well, you know, you're too big of a load on society, so we're not going to fund any kind of care of you, even though you've been paying for years. Thank you very much. Kind of a death squad scenario, if you will. They did come out. I've heard that before from other places. I'm like, I don't know if I believe that. So, but it came out today. A little bit spooky. So you've got these, this is a side note of the bigger point I want to get to. So you got these people running the healthcare on a computer in Washington, D.C., and they have to get authorization from the doctor. This person has so many credits. Can we do this procedure? Oh, this one, yeah, plenty of credits, however it works. And they can say no. Well, how do you know this? Well, there's a flow chart with the score or the credit score, whatever they got. You know, and imagine somebody in a life and death situation, they might be the most wonderful sweetheart grandmother you ever met, and because of Obamacare, she's going to be denied the care. Well, how do you decide that? Well, it's not the doctor. The doctor would say, I'm going to do it. Nope, you can't. You've got to get authorization. So who's going to be running this little bunch of bureaucrats? I mean, imagine this scenario, if you will. Okay, I had a buddy who worked for telemarketer, marketing company, when I was in college, and he was explaining to me, he was reciting all these if-thens, if somebody's interested or not. If-then, it's a flow chart. I mean, he was just a college student. Could you imagine somebody just making your decision for you? Who could be pulled off the street and given a job, reading on the screen, talking to a doctor's assistant, flowchart. No, I'm sorry, I can't get authorization.
And real quick, I want to bring this in from the chat. It said it's called the and think Vita K. It's the IPAB clause. Is what she put in the chat. It says that she has an experience where her father was denied that. It's IPAB. It's Obama's committee. Go ahead, Kelly. I just want to bring that
okay.
in from the chat. Thank you, bud. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, who in the heck is going to be making these decisions? Some low-level government agent that has no clue about medicine and just goes off the computer screen, the flow chart? I mean, this is spooky. Are we going to make these decisions for other people's lives? I mean, this is important, like spooky. But anyway, the other thing that I'm beginning to wonder is just the whole setup for the computer thing to crash. All right? Let's just look at this. Wait a minute. You've got a government that put a man on the moon in the 60s, developed the atomic bomb in the 40s. You've got the American people who've done phenomenal technological advances. I actually met the granddaughter of the guy who invented the computer, the Antonov Berry computer.
Real quick, before we move on to that, I just want to add this in before we get off topic and get away from that. The IPAB... this is the Independent Payment Advisory Board. This is a link, and we'll put it here on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page on Facebook, a link to it. But it's on Wikipedia, you know, where folks can find that. And I just read it's too long to read here on the show, but folks can now just read the first two paragraphs, and then we'll move on to you, Kelly. I just want to bring this in while you mentioned it. So the Independent Payment Advisory Board, or IPAB, is a 15-member United States government agency created in 2010 by Section 3403 and 10320 of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which has the explicit task of achieving specified savings in Medicare without affecting coverage or quality. Well, we'll see. It says the previous and current law changes to Medicare payment rates and program rules are recommended by the MedPAC. And then it has there where you can get a link to see what the MedPAC is, but requires an act of Congress to take effect. The new system grants IPAB the authority to make changes to the Medicare program, with the Congress being given the power to overrule the agency's decision through a super majority vote. So that's the first paragraph in it, and you can, again, find it on Wikipedia, and I will put the link in the chat. And it's already in the chat, but I'll also put it on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page there on Facebook. So go ahead, Kelly, and thank you for letting me interject that.
Okay, so some I don't know how many, a dozen people, two dozen, whatever, it doesn't matter. How are they going to be able to handle the millions and millions? They can't. They got to put it on a computer and figure out a system that's cold and calculated and just point blank spooky. You know, no wonder doctors are leaving the industry. Anyway, I want to get to a bigger picture of the computer, the technology, the failed launch. I mean, that was a disaster. It's like, look, we got incredible technologies here in America. I mean, we got nuclear power plants, we got this and that, and blah 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 blah. Okay, phenomenal technology. We invented the telephone, you know, the light bulb, blah blah blah. Why can't we get this right? On Fox, there was a computer programmer who said, "Are you serious? How many tens of millions was spent on this software and it's failed? For a million, my firm could have done this. No brainer. We would have had it done by now." There's other, I program in four languages, but you know what? It's a disaster. And so you begin to wonder, okay, we got this talent, we got this money, and they messed it up. Okay, something bigger is going on. And a couple possibilities. One is to distract the public's attention. Oh, such a failure. Oh, they're having a heyday. You know, Brett Baer on Fox, he goes, "This failure is the gift that keeps on giving." And so, all right, we got these problems. It's all over the news. What's the problem? You know, it's just like the circus sideshow. Oh, look over here. You can't go to the main event. Well, lo and behold, Congress is going back to revisit Benghazi. That's pop. And the war in Syria. Oh, I got our public minds off of that. Now let's go after Benghazi again. Oh, the failed crash. Oh, and that's back to Benghazi. You begin to wonder, we have the talent, the funds, the ability. You begin to wonder, the higher purpose behind the crash, was it so that we got distracted again? Or is there something else, some backup plan that's even more scary than Obamacare?
I think you're right. And there could be two things. It could be both of what you just said.
Yeah, I just have a suspicion right now, and I have the right to be suspicious. Something is going on. Something's afoot. Don't know what it is. Is it too distract? I don't know. All I know is I have a right to be suspicious when you have all this talent. You know, somebody pointed out brilliantly the signs at all the national parks. Within 8 hours, a government contract was let. Within 8 hours, they got the lowest qualified bidder of hundreds of bids. They reviewed them all. Within 8 hours, the contractors built all these signs, and they shipped them all over the country, posted these signs on the national parks. Like, no. This takes months to do. It was planned to have the shutdown, have the signs ready, put them on the national parks. You know, it's amazing how efficient they can make these signs. You know, something's afoot there when you know the government procuring process. So what in the heck is going on here? We typically think, well, government's just kind of blundering and they're incompetent, da-da-da-da-da, we blow it off that way. But no. Something is afoot.
Cindy?
Yeah, well, there's definitely some big shenanigans going on, and they're doing stuff behind our backs that we probably can't even imagine at this point. I mean, just think about it. Our worst suspicions could be just small change compared to what they're planning, and we might really should be talking more about serious NSA attacks on Americans, serious attacks on our pages, our websites, our emails. I mean, it's probably the tip of the iceberg what we're actually seeing that's coming in the news. And and why is the media, why did 60 Minutes do a story on Benghazi? Well, they had to have permission They wouldn't have done it without permission. So, I don't know. It's hard to say. And all I can hope, all we can hope, is that somebody, the real person, the handlers, Obama's not at the top of this thing. There's people above Obama. His handlers, whoever is controlling him, I wish they would just get sick of him and decide to do away with him. I don't mean physically do away with him. I mean get him out of office, allow him to be impeached or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
then they'll have Biden
say,
in there. Well, I mean, what?
Well, yeah.
I think that's why they don't. I mean, I think that's why you purposely put Biden there. Because they'd be like, man, no one will ever impeach me if Biden's in there.
Well, he didn't choose O'Biden any more than he chose himself. But he is their assurance that we won't go after Obama so hard because what we get is Biden.
Oh, yeah, I agree. That's what I think.
Yeah, so I don't know. It probably can't happen that we would get rid of him, probably. But there has to be a reason why that 60 Minutes program was shown. And I'm with Kelly. I think there's stuff going on behind the scenes that all used to distract us. You'll remember a few weeks ago, Robert, I said this, that if you look at how many crises that we have going on at the same time, and they go on to the other, to the other, to the other, that is because they have to keep us moving. They have to keep the crises moving. They have to keep the bad press moving to the next subject, so that they can distract us. And
go ahead and finish your thought.
Well, I'm done with that. I want to ask Robert to give me time to discuss some of European insurance plans, their government health care, and make some comparisons with ours and stuff at some time or another.
Well, yes, certainly. And what we'll do is I'll just go on to this the next clip I have here. It's only about 4 minutes. Go ahead, Kelly, if you want
Robert
to chime in, then we'll play the clip and we'll go back to what Cindy wants to talk about with the comparing the European system.
Okay.
Go ahead. Kelly? I thought you wanted to add a comment to what you said.
Yeah, well, it's really quick. You remember on the show, I don't know, it was a couple months ago, whatever it was, with Syria, we were talking about Obama wins either way because the media gets distracted and gets off Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we go to war or not, the distraction has been, oh, this is serious. And then now we come back, oh, what's Benghazi? Oh, we got the healthcare crash. Oh, and then they're still going forward with Benghazi. So Obama won with the Syria thing either way for the distraction technique.
It can also be a wearing us down technique. We're so tired of fighting all these battles that eventually people will give up because we're not getting joined by enough people. Here, let me tell you, there is a small, very small minority of Americans like us out there working against this guy. Most people are just driving. I mean, you look down the highway and there's people driving past you that have no clue what's going on. They're never on the Internet. They listen to ABC, CBS, CNN. They don't care. They catch a little bit of the news sometime around after dinner, and that's all they can stomach, and they're off to their Dancing with the Stars or their Survivor or whatever other piece of trash show they like to watch. Sorry if I offended anybody. anyway, it's just all of that is meant to distract us from our real duties as American citizens. We need to be out there getting ourselves informed. It's our duty. We are citizens in a democratic republic. That means we have something to say about this. In fact, it's all about us. And if we don't start taking our duty seriously, if we don't start taking our responsibility seriously and actually becoming activated and not just sitting there listening to it on TV, I mean doing something about it, spreading the word, getting the information to people. If we don't do that, if we don't start doing it soon, and it's us little, 2% of us out here with our big mouths going, it's all over for us, because as long as they can keep us, this little 2% people, quiet or busy with one thing after the other, and they wear us out. They're wearing us down. Like old Steve Urkel used to say, "I'm wearing you down, Laura." that's what they're up to. It's moving us from topic to topic, so we can't get too deep into any particular topic. We're just scratching the surface of each crisis, each thing.
Well, and as you said, there's so much going on, one after the other. You can only, catch one. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there still going away on, exploring and talking about Benghazi. So I know that hasn't quite gone away. I know there's a lot of folks, especially I see folks talking about it a lot still on Twitter and Facebook about Benghazi. But, there's just every week, we do a new show, and every week it seems like there's different things to talk about. Now, we talked a lot about Obamacare, and we'll spend more time on it. And we'll bring a clip in, but first I'll bring in a comment that Harriet made in the chat. I believe this is talking about our earlier discussion on the NSA. Harriet puts that there seems to be more connection with Russia play with Obama than meets the eye. Who is the real leader of America? And she also puts in, just with a discussion, talking about garbage on Facebook that is absolutely not going to help our, I guess you spoke about people on social media. Some people out there just talking garbage on Facebook, and that is absolutely not going to help get our country back. Have to play, have to be entertained. And I agree with that. But I think people just get beat up, throughout the day so much that welcome Sandman 1973 SE in the chat. I want to welcome you to the show. And for those who have come in new and like to chime in tonight, we still have time. That's 347-945-7428. And just push 1 on your number dial, or send me a message here on the chat on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you're on Facebook, you can send a chat to me that way as well to chime in. Back to what Harriet was saying, you said, I think people are just so beat up during the end of a work day, they just want to sit and veg and not think about a lot of things, that's going on in the country, and I think it's set up that way, for people just, just too tired to do it. But as you guys point out, we're tired, we're beat up, but we have to just continue going, or else the government's just going to just roll over us. But at this point, I am going to, I do have someone who'd like to chime in. I see 410 that you'd like to add into the discussion. But first, before I have you come in, I do have a short clip. It's only about 4 minutes that I would like to play. And it's David Gregory asking a few questions about Obamacare. What we'll do is we'll play the short clip. 410, area code 410, we will let you in and get you in, and we'll go from there. So here's the clip from Meet the Press on Sunday with David Gregory.
After President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act into law in 2010, he often repeated this statement. If you like your insurance plan, you will keep it. No one will be able to take that away from you. It hasn't happened yet. It won't happen in the future.
Well, that turns out that it may not, in fact, be the case. Hundreds of thousands of Americans are receiving notices that their plans are being canceled because of the guidelines set by the health care law. In Florida, for instance, the oldest and largest health care plan provider, Florida Blue, the state's Blue Cross and Blue Shield company, confirmed it is cutting 300,000 policies. Joining me now from London is Florida Blue CEO Pat Garrity. Mr. Garrity, thank you for being here. Why are you cutting these people from their insurance?
Well, David, we're not cutting people. We're actually transitioning people. What we've been doing is informing folks that their plan doesn't meet the test of the essential health benefits. Therefore, they have a choice of many options that we make available through the exchange. And in fact, with subsidy, many people will be getting better plans at a lesser cost. So this really is a transition. And in fact, the 300,000 figure is the entire year. So it's really 40,000 people for January 1, and we're walking them through that transition.
So if I've got health insurance that I now like, you're writing to me and saying, look, I got to give more comprehensive coverage under this plan. As a result, you got to go find something else. You're going to pay more, chances are, but maybe if you qualify for subsidies, you know, you'll pay less in the end. There is still a disruptive aspect. You can talk about migrating, you can talk about transitioning. I'm not just asking about Florida, but asking you to look more broadly. There are people who have what they like and are going to end up paying more. There is some sticker shock that's going to be out there with this law. Is that fair?
David, what I can tell you is that in Florida, because that's what I represent, in Florida, we are doing 3,000 education seminars from the beginning of September through the end of March, making sure that people understand what their options are. We're in all 67 counties. We've built retail centers. We're reaching out to our customers so they understand what their choices are.
No,
and we believe that
Mr. Gary,
will
my
find
question
choices
is,
there
will people
that
pay
work.
More? My question is, will people pay more?
People who are subsidized are going to probably have the opportunity to pay less. It really is an individualized issue. And there may be some people who pay more, but it really depends on your individual circumstances.
You met at the White House with senior aides going through this Obamacare rollout. As an insurance executive, you signed up for basically a deal here, which is to say, okay, we'll cover people who have pre-existing conditions. We'll do that if you can deliver us some more business. Give us younger, healthier people who probably aren't going to need our insurance, and that's how we'll make money and balance out the fact that we're going to pay more out covering people with pre-existing conditions. That was the deal. Is this model going to work based on the rollout you're seeing?
Well, there's no denying that the rollout has had bumps, and we actually expected there would be bumps in the beginning of the process. The good thing about the meeting we had at the White House is it was very positive. It was candid. We laid issues on the table. We had a good exchange with the folks at the White House. And we had commitment, particular commitment around a piece called direct enrollment. That direct enrollment allows us, the insurance industry, to help the administration get people signed up. As that gets prioritized, we'll be able to help bring people into the exchange, and we think that that will be a big lift for the installation of the Affordable Care Act.
Did you warn the White House that they could face this? They could face this kind of tough rollout? Did they ignore some warning?
David, I think the real issue here is we got to work on how do we fix this. We're working together to...
Okay, so that was the crux of that part that I want to share with Obamacare. And before I bring 410 on, I'll just make some brief comments. To me, it sounds like through that conversation, big business and government colluding to stick it to the American people. And one of the numbers that comes up is 15 million people who have to change their health care. Well, if you recall during the, and then they kind of play it off like, well, you know, some Americans will have to change their health care. Maybe about 15 million would do that. And they're making like, yeah, only 15 million, you know, as if that's a small number. But then when there was the government shutdown, they're making a big deal about the 800,000 folks that would be affected by the government shutdown. But yet, as if, oh my gosh, 800,000 people, that's such a big deal. But when it comes to 15 million folks, and probably more, much more, that'll have to change their health care, as if, well, you know, that's only some of the people who, you know, will be, you know, affected by Obamacare. But after putting that out there, more food for thought for people to chime in on. But at this time, I will be opening up your mic, 410. You can just tell us where you're from and your name, and thank you very much for coming on the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? I'm Sandman in the chat room. I'm Chris from Maryland.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for calling in.
I used to be on here a lot. I kind of got discouraged because, like, you know, I live in Maryland. But the clip you played and everything, of course, if you're asking the question if big business is colluding with government, And shouldn't we just go back to history with Germany and all? I mean, all this is played out. We know what's going to happen. We know the end game. The biggest problem is people paying attention and learning history, which is never going to happen because of the way our school systems are. So I'm not, you know, I don't know where to begin. I'm frustrated because, honestly, at some point people become stupid and not illogical and ignorant. So we know what's going to happen. And we all knew this was going to happen. And his end game plan, yet the president gets up there, and they finally get up there and lies and lies, and the media plays it, and they just pass it on. At some point, the logical, reasonable people get set up and tired of all of it because we understand what's going on. But this plays out throughout history. We're doing everything Germany did, are we not? What Hitler did and raising or devaluing the dollar. At some point, our interest rates are going through the roof. Stock market is going through the roof now, which is based on nothing. It's paper. It's lies. And, of course, who did not believe this was going to happen? The only thing is, I mean, we've impeached or we tried to impeach Nixon on something that was so minuscule that nobody has the balls to even bring it up now, to this whole administration, to everybody with Hillary Clinton and Harry Reid and all these people. I don't know.
Yeah, you bring up a very good point. They, you know, they want to impeach him for that, but then look all of what Obama's done for that. And are you familiar with the overpasses for Obama's impeachment?
A little out here. I do have a question, and it's logical. Maybe these people are crazy, if you want to believe the people who think to impeach Obama is crazy. However, the only other outlook you can have is that he really doesn't know anything like he says, which means he's the most uninformed president ever, and he should still not hold the office. So it's either or. It doesn't really matter. He's the most uninformed president, or he's lying. It really doesn't matter, does it?
No, it doesn't. And actually, they were talking about that on I was watching another show on Sunday. Well, I recorded it. It was one of the Sunday shows, and I'm going to be playing a clip from it tonight. I think it's A360, and it's with Anderson Cooper on there. And I've got another clip I'm going to play shortly on that. But I do see that we only have wow, time flies. About 11 minutes left of the live time here on the show. So for those of you who are listening in and would like to hear part of the extended version, it looks like we'll be going into at least for a little bit tonight. You can call in at 347-945-7428 because only those who call in can listen to the extended version, and if they miss it, of course, they are welcome to listen to it on the archives, which is available immediately after the show ends, and I believe it's even starts to be available shortly after midnight Eastern time for folks to listen to the live portion, and then is the archive is recording. But if you are on the line, fear not, you will be able to hear and chime in on the extended version. So, again, if you'd like to at least listen in, call it at 347-945-7428. And before I bring it back to you, sir, Sandman 73, is that, you know, and you mentioned education. People are, you know, getting more stupid. And I think that's why it's very important to vote folks in, just like our guest, Justin Bennick-Thomas, where folks can check out his website at www.bennickthomas.com, and you can, you know, check him out and see what he's proposing. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, I think of a lot of localities, education-wise, will adopt what he's working on. I think that will work well, and of course, that's a long-term, but you got to start sometime, correct?
I'm sorry. Do you have kids?
Yes, I have a kid. Yes, I do.
Okay.
In grade school.
When I was doing pretty well before the economy crashed out here, I sent my kids to a Christian school. and I paid a pretty dime. It was a good education. They taught them the foundation. They taught them history. And then things went bad. So I had to take them out and put them in the public school or government school, whatever you want to call it. And within a year, they tried to revert everything my kids had learned. And I had tons of conversations with them explaining that that's not how it is. It's not, history does not change. History is history.
Yeah.
The truth is the truth. And these people are telling you stuff, they have an agenda. And now they're going into third year, and I have fights with their teachers, and I'm not helping them at all because the more I talk, the more they hate my kids. But it's the truth. They don't teach them the truth. They don't teach them anything. They teach them lies and propaganda. And, I mean, I went through that in college. I went through the fact where I went to a school that was liberal. And I went through it, and I learned all the stuff that my professors taught me. And then guess what? I went in the real world. I learned really quick. Wow. That was all crap. You know, it doesn't make sense. But now you're creating the atmosphere where nobody can learn. The economy is terrible. They're doing everything every other country has done in the world in history that screws everything up. And yet the only people who tell the truth are the bad people. It's a hard world, but I don't think, and well, the first thing I saw on your site was the NSA. I don't think the NSA is screwing up America. I think that's our own government that's done stuff throughout history. Nobody wakes up to it. Nobody questions anything. Nobody has the operative mind to just question anybody or ask what's going on or be inquisitive or just ask questions. Everybody's put in this mold of just go along to get along. You know, kind of sucks, but that's what I think.
And Kelly, and then Cindy, if you'd like to chime in on anything Sandman73 said, go ahead. What do you think, Kelly?
Well, I've been a little bit distracted multitasking, but the key word for this euthanasia deciding whether the elderly people do or don't get care is called the death panels. It's kind of a slang or a colloquial. But other than that, I just want to clarify that. But other than that, I really, I don't know. I'm just going to listen for a while.
Okay. What about you, Cindy?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll give you this information now after talking to some of my friends from Europe.
Oh, yes, certainly. Yeah, I definitely want to get to that tonight. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sandman 73, real quick, for Cindy. Chimes on, if you're new to calling in a show or it's been a while since you call in the show, we will keep your mic open so that you can chime in on whatever you hear later on. So we do keep mics open here, so you're welcome to stay with us.
I am. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead, Cindy.
Okay. Well, I spoke a long time to a friend of mine in Canada. Now, what he did was he didn't know a lot of the answers to the questions that I asked. It's his dad's company that we're talking about here, and the lady that runs their payroll, she's the one that he gave me to her so that she could explain to me how their health insurance, their government insurance works there. First of all, Canada is a little bit different from our ACA. Canada is an employer mandate. Every employer has to put into the system. Now, the first $400,000 of your gross payroll is exempt. So that takes care of the smaller companies. It's only the bigger companies that are supposed to be paying into this. And that's about 2% a month that they have to put in for each employee. Now, this does not include, at least it doesn't anymore, it did at first, but they ran out of money. So now they no longer include dental, vision, drugs, chiropractic, or anything like that. Okay? You have to buy a separate policy if you want any of that, and you have to pay for it yourself. They also have a long time. It takes them a long time to get into the hospital because the wait time is just ridiculous because there's everybody coming in there for every little thing. Now, we've already predicted that that's what would happen here. As soon as you have everybody on it, every little sickness, every little sniffle, they're going to have their kids in there. They're going to come in there to the hot, to the emergency room, and they're going to clog it up. She said that if you have an emergency situation, they'll do an MRI on you right away. But if it's not an emergency situation, let's say you really messed up your foot or something like that, you will wait several weeks for your MRI because everybody's going to have an MRI. Everybody's got to have an MRI. Now, they have also, now how does this all get paid for? Well, that 2% that the employer mandate takes care of is not all that these people have to pay. This is all hidden. And because they made it an employer mandate, they hid the cost of everything from their people. The people have no clue where the money is really coming from. All they can think to themselves is, oh, my employer's paying 2%, so now I have insurance. Well, they're also paying for it in their federal income tax, provincial income tax, Canadian pension tax, workman's comp. They have an unemployment tax. They have a sales tax of 13% on everything, your phone bill, your electric, your water, everything you purchase. Either at a store or online, everything has a 13% tax on it. So things cost a lot more than they would if it hasn't been for this health insurance.
Can I say something real quick? If she's talking about taxes,
Go ahead.
Maryland is now trying to implement, and they got a lot of support for this, a rain tax. And the environmentalists are pushing the rain tax, which is basically crap, but it's taxed.
The rain tax?
What?
Yes, we're getting... Oh, you haven't heard about this in Maryland? Yeah, they're pushing a rain tax. It's basically a storm bane rain tax. So that's how they push it in America as far as in Canada. They're still pushing all kinds of weird taxes. But, yes, now in Maryland, they're pushing the rain tax, and they're really pushing hard for it.
Now, wait.
How do they monitor that?
Are you talking about rain or drain tax?
Well, it's called a rain tax, but you have so much drain off. There's actually no way to understand it or to measure it. But if you understand anything about Maryland, the only way Maryland still has anything left is because we're so in bed with the federal government. We are broke, unbelievably broke. So we're pushing everything. And if you understand anything about Maryland, you understand the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, which is a great foundation. It's a foundation that tries to clean up the Chesapeake Bay with never, ever trying to clean it up because if they did, they never have any money. But it's the same thing. They tax you to death. It's little things like that.
Well, and probably things cost more there in Maryland, too. That's what's happened in Canada. In fact, anybody that lives anywhere close to the border comes over the border to the United States to do their shopping. Or if they go on vacation or if there are snowbirds, come down for the summer.
Well, isn't it worse than that? I mean, we've already seen the IRS. We've already seen the IRS go after the Tea Party and go after conservatives. So if the IRS cannot control... So said individuals, the IRS is the one in control of all our health care, so you're not, I mean, this is the 1984 book coming.
Well, I think the federal government can control the IRS, and I think they did control the IRS, and that the IRS was operating expressly under the president's administration order.
Well, we know that. But they hate us. The weird thing is, if you think about it logically, honestly, there's only 20% of the population who thinks like Obama thinks. That's it. But yet they get away with all that stuff. Because we have mindless people who don't think. We have such a culture of those who don't think for themselves. Honestly, all we're doing is putting in place a healthcare system that's been a horrible disaster throughout the rest of the country or the rest of the world. And we're implementing it. We've created a website that costs more than any other website throughout history and doesn't work. And, of course, that's what we want.
Yeah.
We have a president who doesn't, has never heard of anything in the whole, his whole term. He's never heard of it. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You know,
and that's
so, I mean,
go ahead.
What are we supposed, honestly, isn't that the question? Is what are you supposed to do to not have your head freaking explode? Because how many more of these lies can we take?
I was watching that tonight. I guess it was Anderson 360 that I recorded for from CNN. But I think that brings up a good segue into the last clip I have here. It's about 9.5 minutes, but it is entertaining, and informative and entertaining. It's just amazing to hear this table with all these liberals and media folks here. That are actually talking, it seems like talking smack about Obamacare or Obama. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to finish saying what I was going to say because I
got to
get off here in a minute.
Certainly. You what? I'm sorry?
The rest of Europe, the European countries, I was not able to find out a lot about their health care policies because I know that Denmark and England, they subsidize their athletes. So they don't have to pay anything. They pay them to do their sport, and they pay them to for all their insurance needs and everything. And of course, all the the people that I know are mostly rich enough to be traveling around the world all the time. So they're not really going to be hurt a lot by this. It's the middle class people that don't make a lot of money that are going to get hit very hard by our healthcare system. And they're the ones getting hit in Europe. England, my friend in Denmark, paid for a supplement policy out of England for an extra $5 million of coverage in case she got hurt. Well, she did get hurt. And she had at least six operations on her ankle. And they tried to get her to go back to England to get her treatment. But the doctor here protected her and said, no way, I'm sending her back there because you guys cannot take care of her the way that she needs to be taken care of. And nobody in Denmark was going to do anything close to the treatments that she could get here. They just don't do it. They don't do it. That brings me to the point where there will come a time when America will not be a R&D or, they're not going to do these kinds of treatments. It costs a lot of money because the government's going to be paying for it and the government doesn't want to. So there's going to be a lot of treatments. You're going to end up on crutches for the rest of your life or in the wheelchair for the rest of your life rather than have six operations. In Greece, all my friends in Greece were at one time all subsidized, all their insurance paid. And now after Greece's big problems and how their government has basically gone belly up, there are no more subsidies for their athletes, and those people are under austerity measures, and they were rioting in the streets, and I think they've worn them down. They're not even rioting anymore, as far as I can see, and so you look at the countries that are about to go under. They're starting to do the austerity measures, and that the same thing will happen to us. It sort of happened in Canada, where they had to give up coverage for certain things like dental and vision and all of that, and the same thing will happen here. They will consistently and constantly be pulling treatments and coverage off
of
the government health care because there will not be money for it, because once you drain all the money out of the middle class, there's nothing left except the rich people, and the rich people will not be giving up their money to pay for us to have our health treatment. So it'll be all over with at that point, and we will be nothing but slaves and serfs living at the government's whim, just like we were pre-1700s when King George, in the 1700s when King George was our king. And that's all I had to say about that.
Well, I appreciate the information. It was definitely very interesting. It looks like, unfortunately, Salmon in 73 got disconnected. And unfortunately, on the extended period, once something gets disconnected, they can't call back, which is unfortunate. More fortunate, I would like to have heard more from them. But if you're listening to this on the archives now, Salmon 73, we hope to see and hear you back on the show here on Bard's Logic Local Talk. And so because I promised, and it is interesting and for people to hear, I'll go ahead and play the clip, and we'll make some comments, and then we'll proceed to see how long – proceed to see – like that's a lot of ease in there. But anyway, see how much of the extended version we'll use tonight, but we'll go from there. But first, I will go ahead and play this clip, and this is actually Anderson Cooper.
Obamacare under fire, still, yet again, with the Affordable Care Act already off to an inauspicious start. The trouble just keeps on coming. A report obtained by CNN now shows the Obama administration was warned that healthcare.gov was not ready to go live. And it looks like one of the president's mantras, if you like your health plan, you can keep it, may not be true for some 15 million Americans. The question is, does the White House have a message problem, or is there a lot more? Joining me now on the panel, Andrew Sullivan, founding editor of The Dish. His website is AndrewSullivan.com. CNN political commentator, Republican strategist Anna Navarro. CNN political commentator, New York Times op-ed columnist Charles Blow. And fifth chair tonight, New York Times op-ed columnist Frank Bruni. Let's start with Chief National Correspondent John King, who is in Washington. John, it is remarkable. This president, time and time again, said, if you like the insurance you have, you can keep it. It will not change. It will not go away. Now it seems like that is technically not true, not even technically not true. It's just not true for some 15 million Americans because the kind of insurance that they have, which is a very basic form of insurance, does not meet the new requirements under the Affordable Care Act and therefore has to be replaced.
And so, Anderson, the website has been a political problem. The administration says we'll go away and all will be fine. This is much more of a personal policy problem. Now, back when the president was saying those things, it was kind of like an ad for a new drug. You know, there were the flowers and the roses and the nice soft music, and everything's promised will be great. And then at the end, they kind of mumble that not everything might be perfect. Some of the administration did say, that of course, there would be some changes. When you bring such dramatic policy changes to the market, of course, some people would have to change, but most people would get to keep these. But now that this is real, now that people are enrolling, now that people at work are getting their open enrollment for next year, and this is happening, it's a giant credibility test for the president and the insurance industry. Consider the source, but the insurance industry says it's the administration's fault that as they were doing this, the insurance industry said, you guys are writing the regulations too strict. You're going to affect people. You're going to knock people off their plans, and you promise not to do that. And what the industry says is the administration said, we got this. We don't need to listen to you. We're fine. Now I got a problem.
And I want to play with Jim Acosta. He had an exchange with Jay Carney at the White House today. Let's listen to that.
Did the president mislead the American people when he made that comment repeatedly?
Jim, no. The president was clear about a basic fact. If you had insurance that you liked on the individual market and you wanted to keep that insurance through 2010, 11, 12, 13, and in perpetuity if you wanted it and it was available, you could. You were grandfathered in. What no healthcare reform could envision or could responsibly stipulate is that any plan that might come along in the next few years would be grandfathered in, because that would undermine the basic premise of providing the minimum benefits for the American people.
Andrew, what about this? I mean, should the president have been clearer and not said so point categorically, if you like your plan, you can keep it?
Of course he should have. I mean, it's obviously a small proportion of most Americans. You can have all sorts of caveats about this. If you really have a bare-bones insurance plan that doesn't meet the standards of the ACA, you're going to have to change it. You're going to have to upgrade it. Now, the technical issue of whether the day before 2010 you could keep the same plan, everything else was grandfathered in, but the plan itself would be amended, you keep the same plan as opposed to a different plan. Look, it wasn't a lie, but it was something I'm not sure we can say it on CNN. Can you say BS on? It was BS.
It's called malarkey.
That's what it was. It wasn't exactly a lie.
In Democratic speak, it's called malarkey.
Oh, come on.
But listen,
no.
John, I want to ask you something, because what Jay Carney was just talking about being grandfathered in. So, as I understand it, the law did grandfather in plans that people had before March 2010. But then HHS wrote regulations that narrowed down the definition so much that a lot of those plans that were grandfathered in fell out of the grandfather clause, and people are losing those plans.
Anything Washington does, we always focus on the legislative battle, actually finding enough votes to pass the bill. The real test and the real policy challenge in Washington is always writing the regulations, especially when it's something so complicated. And that is what is happening now. And I think Andrew hit it right on the head. Is it a lie? It was certainly the intent of the administration that if you have a plan and you like it, you could keep it. But they are the ones writing these rules now, and some people are getting knocked off. And in this political environment, that's a personal policy challenge for anyone who's being hassled by this. They might even realize in a year or two they like their plan better, and it's either the same amount of money, a little less, or not so much more. But at the moment, it's a personal hassle on something that's incredibly personal to you, your health care, and for Republicans, it's T-ball.
And Charles, it could cost some people more money. I mean, they might get subsidies.
It will cost some people less money, and I think that is the bigger failure here, which is that you want to disclose while you're on offense. You don't want to have to make up for when you're on defense. Now you're on defense and somebody else has brought this to the public attention and they're having to deal with it on defense. That's not the position that the administration wants to be in. The president could very easily have said, and this would not have been a big deal, to say the vast majority of Americans will be able to keep their health care as it exists now under Obamacare. And for the small number, 5% of the insurance market,
Well, that's a really good question. Now, John mentioned the word credibility. I think there's an accretion of things happening that make it feel like Obamacare is unfolding in a way that the administration never even saw. I mean, we've had the website disasters. We have these numbers of people who are losing their plans, which these numbers seem much higher than anything that was suggested. And I think Americans, certainly I'm getting the sense, that the administration kind of really didn't see clearly what the consequences of its own signature initiative would be.
I don't know about that, Frank. You know, this thing about not knowing things is getting a little old.
Well, but I'm not,
they don't
I'm
know
not
about
saying
the IRS,
it's okay.
Doesn't know about the NSA, doesn't know about Obamacare.
I'm not saying it's okay that it wasn't known. And I think not knowing is
very troubling.
For the
Commander-in-Chief of the United States.
It may not be a good look, but I think that this is the missed opportunity, right, which is that the vast majority of the people who are not, who buy their insurance on the individual marketplace are single. That's a Democratic voting block, right? Almost half of them are below 40 years old. The younger group is Democratic voting block. You could have said this and be talking to the people who are generally on your side anyway. So that you could have said this and taken away this Republican talking point that says, I'm speaking for the American people. But they're not speaking for the American people. They're speaking for people who are not really affected by
this. John, the administration says they knew about this, right?
Well, the administration was told about this. The administration was told about this as the regulations were being written, A, from the outside from the insurance industry, B, from the inside from some of their own people. Then the question is how high up the chain of command did that go? And that is one of the big questions. Anna just touched on it in Washington right now. You know, Secretary Clinton says she was never told about the security warnings in Benghazi. The president said he was never told about Angela Merkel's phone and things like that. The president says he wasn't told about the website problems. Let's assume all that's true. It raises questions about the culture of the management. Don't you want the boss to know when there are things happening that could undermine his signature domestic initiative or could undermine an important relationship in the world? Republicans are going to do right now to this president what Democrats did to George W. Bush at about the same point. Not only raise the credibility question, but the competence question.
And I want to talk more about that really in our next block, but just on Obamacare. I mean, I guess one benefit of this for the administration is it certainly knocked off, you know, off the front page all the mess ups with the website. I mean, this is not really the way you want to go about it.
That's not a good thing. I think it's a problem to conflate all these things together. These are really separate issues. But if the boss is going out and over saying something that somebody in the administration knows not to be true, that's a very different animal. And I think that at that point, absolutely someone has to step forward and say, hey, you know, you keep saying this one thing.
Either his staff is keeping him in a bubble of ignorant
I don't believe that.
Or they're claiming to be keeping him in a bubble of ignorant bliss, and neither of the two are good.
Andrew, you're saying?
I would just love a politics that Obama kind of promised, where people could say at the get-go, look, we're doing health care reform, there will be some losers, and there will be some winners. And the losers are going to be the current free riders, the people who are scamming the system without paying into it through insurance. The winners will be all those people who are out there, who are of limited income, who desperately need health insurance and cannot now afford it. The real problem right now, it seems to me, is that with these stories coming out, you want those people to go on that website to see what subsidies they're going to get.
And they can't.
And they can't. So they can't even tell if this premium increase is going to be compensated by the subsidies.
There are other ways to do it.
There are
other
ways.
We have
come on.
We do have to
come
on.
You're talking about the toll-free
number. Well,
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. So it's interesting to hear them, you know, these folks. So normally, you know, you would see them supporting Obama. They're actually starting to, well, I think they pretty much have to. I mean, they see what's going on, and if they don't address it, I think people will see them as, you know, just liberal hacks, which many times that they are. So they have to, you know, have to discuss it in, you know, in that light. So, you know, they talked about one other thing about the 15 million who will have to change their providers because of the new requirements. Of course, we heard of, you know, requirements that are now in the new bill that a lot of people, they just don't need them. I mean, it just sounds like some superfluous coverage that a lot of folks don't need. Such as I heard is, you know, some kind of, I'll have to look more into it, but I heard stories where people saying where, you know, things that only a woman would use are actually available on for the men's coverage or something like that. Did either one of you guys hear anything about that?
Yeah. I just got a message. I just got a notice in the mail today from Blue Cross Blue Shield that my policy was only going to be good until the summer of 2014. You remember I told you I have a huge deductible. I have a $20,000 deductible. I basically, all I have is catastrophic health insurance. And basically what they're telling me is that I will no longer be able to have only catastrophic. They're going to force me into buying insurance for anything beyond that. Just all their, you know, they want all the stuff that they want to have covered. It's, you know what this is looking like to me? It's a big deal between big insurance companies and big government. All the little insurance companies are going to be put out of business, and all the big ones are going to have all these huge contracts. And we're going to be paying out so many bucks, and the draining of the middle class is going to happen. It's going to drain upwards, not downwards, you understand? Everybody thinks that the poor are going to be taken care of, and we're going to, they're going to come into our, they're going to be able to, you know, be raised
up to the middle class.
We're going to spread that wealth around, put some down, but the wealth is not going to go down, it's going to go up. So that is such a farce and such a lie, and I'm just tired of the lies.
And Kelly, I know you were listening for a while, but did you want to comment on anything that you heard on that clip?
Just tell you a local situation here with healthcare, or Medi-Cal, which is the California version of Medicare. So there's this guy, you know, neat guy, he's a single dad working hard to raise his son, and he's, oh my gosh, I got to have Medi-Cal. I got to because, you know, he's concerned about his son. Well, the state of California sent him a requirement. You have to sign up for Obamacare in order to receive your California Medi-Cal benefits. And this guy, he doesn't like the government, doesn't trust the government. He knows they're all a bunch of jokers. But he went ahead and did it.
Oh, no.
I was kind of shocked.
Wow.
And yeah, so, you know, through the states, the Medi-Cal, whatever, Missouri Cal, pick a Cal, I don't care, or, you know, care.
Have a Cal.
You know, it just...
Wow.
Kind of spooky. Of course, you expect that out of California. except for in the state of Jefferson.
Well, yeah, how's that going, by the way? I'm kind of curious about that.
Monroe County joined us. Monroe County voted to send the declaration to the assembly, their board of county board of supervisors. It was unanimous. So when you combine Siskiyou County and Modoc County, we are larger than Massachusetts in land area, saying, well, we're politely putting the middle finger to the State House in Sacramento. It's more of a political statement. It'll take years to anything to come to fruition, but, you know, it's a statement.
And certainly. Well, it'll be interesting to see if down the line we'll have our 59th state. According to Obama.
According to him, we already have 54.
Oh, okay. I thought he said 57, but
no.
Well, it changes from day to day, Robert.
No, that's true. Well, that's if he knows. He might not know. No one might have told him how many states there really are. So
well,
he may not know. I mean, he don't know about NSA. He don't know about Benghazi. He doesn't know about.
We don't know nothing, but he's an intelligent man. Oh my gosh, he's so intelligent.
Yeah, one of the smartest presidents we've ever had.
Yeah, smart enough to bring our nation down. That's how smart he is.
He'd be the puppet of folks who are trying.
Yeah.
But I do find it interesting that even you know, people in the media, in the mainstream media, you know, are mostly liberals are now starting to cover this. I find that kind of, you know, I just find that kind of interesting. That's why I want to cover it tonight, because, I mean, if they're actually, you know, laughing about it and talking about it, then it's probably even worse than what they're putting it to be. So, and I do see it in there, you know, people try to, you know, make excuses and saying, oh, it's going to end up working out and this and that, blah, 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 but yeah. Well, just for the fans, of course, by the time people listen to this on the, I guess on the archives, they already know that the Boston Red Sox are the World Series champions this year. So I just got that little tidbit of information a few moments ago.
Not that I care.
I don't really care either. Most of the baseball fans out there, but as I said, if they're baseball fans, I'm sure they know about it by now if they listen to the archives. But what I'll do is it looks like we'll be shutting the extended period down a little bit earlier tonight. I think, speaking of the World Series, that might have been a contributing factor to not having as many callers tonight or as many in the chat. I think that might have played a big role. But for those who weren't at the live, welcome, and hope you enjoyed our archive show as well. And definitely check out Justin Benedict Thomas on his website, www.benedictthomas.com. And, of course, like us on Facebook, the Bard's Logic Political Talk on Facebook, and check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, where you could send the host a message, check out some of the links we have there, and also visit our gift page, which has some wonderful organizations and some wonderful charities for people to give to, including the just for $10, you can text at 80100. And then put lion in the message part. For only $10, you could send a stuffed lion to a child that was recently diagnosed with cancer. And we also have some other organizations on there as well for people to check out. So what I do is give some closing comments to you, Cindy, and then to Kelly, and then we'll move on. I'll proceed to close out the show for tonight. And thank you, everyone, for coming, whether you just listened or whether you participated in the show. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, let me just kind of recap what I said. We're in for some big problems if the people of this country don't wake up and start holding our political people accountable and start being responsible citizens and getting information. We cannot have low information voters anymore unless people want to just return to serfdom. I look around at all the people that are complaining about, you know, the poor people and how we need to spread the wealth around, and they're voting with their heart because they think they're doing the right thing. You know, we got to help the poor people, but what we're doing is not going to help the poor people. The poor people will be most helped if our economy is booming and there's jobs out there,
mm-hmm.
where you can rise through the ranks and you can actually become a doctor, a lawyer, an Indian chief, whatever you want to be.
Cindy, I'm not so sure people want to become a lawyer. They have, like, screwed our country.
Well, I'm not sure that I would want my kids to be lawyers. Well, actually, I want somebody in my family to be a lawyer so that I have somebody who's honest and I can actually go to. But anyway.
I want to be an Indian chief. Yeah, because.
All right, Geronimo. Anyway,
I don't know what happened to him. No good.
I'm just hoping that Americans will wake up and get themselves educated before it goes to the point of no return. Because very shortly now, it will be at a point of no return as far as making a political change or stopping the things they're doing politically. There will be probably an armed revolt, a chance for an armed revolt if people want to go that far. But why should you wait and let it come to that,
mm-hmm.
when our Constitution gives us the ability to fight it politically? What our forefathers did for us was to assure us a way that we could get out of our troubles without war. I mean, at least not a civil war. But,
right.
You know, one time already we have this...
coup, right, go ahead.
Right, and one time already we have decided to just forego the political way and go the violent way, and that was the Civil War. And I just hope and pray that they don't decide to wait until that happens again. Wake up, people. That's all I got to say.
So thank you very much, Cindy, as always, for coming in tonight. And we will see you here on Bard's Logic Political Talk next week at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. But I'm sure you and I will talk before then. Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, I mentioned something about attorneys with Cindy, and that's, you know, attorneys aren't so bad. I mean, it's the problem with attorneys is the 90% that makes the 10% look bad. So, but yeah, you know, socialism, I just had a change of heart, guys. Socialism isn't really that bad. It's wonderful.
No.
I mean, no, I love to take money from Peter, Paul, Mary, Joe, Cindy, and Robert and give it to, you know, homeless Bob on the street. I feel wonderful when I give somebody money. It's not mine, but I feel wonderful.
Of course.
To give money away to somebody who's just in need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that high I get from giving away other people's money. You know, I just think it's awesome. So, you know, I was joking around, of course. That is one of the things that fuels socialism and that mentality. Oh, I'm up in Congress. Oh, I'm giving Americans the money of the American people away to those who don't deserve it. I feel so wonderful, and people come up and worship me because I'm a congressman, Feinstein and Pelosi and blah, blah, blah. It's a hypnotic addiction.
Gag me with a spoon, man.
I know, but it's disgusting. It's because they feel so wonderful giving other people's money away to the disfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that these people actually have such a mental disturbance, such a lack of self-esteem that they have to get it by giving away other people's money. Jeez, I wish that
was their real motive, but I don't believe that's their motive, that they feel good. I think that Pelosi and all the rest of those people know exactly what they're doing. They're ushering in the New World Order by destroying the sovereignty of the United States, by making us a weak nation. And that's all it's about. It has nothing to do with them feeling good. It has to do with control. They're all a bunch of control freaks. And that's what
actually,
they want.
Well, I mean, there's a part of that, too. Actually, G. Edward Griffin talked about this in his book, Creature from Jekyll Island, because he leads to socialism. Mm-hmm. The powers that be that want to rule the world, they don't care about socialism. They don't care about corporatism, whatever left or right is dominating us. They don't care. They just know that they can use the prejudices of the people and the weaknesses of the people to motivate them to do their work. And in the end, they're just laughing hysterically at the socialists. It's a power play on the heartstrings of those who want to give to the poor but taking from others.
But they're actually ushering in slavery.
Exactly. And they will use anybody for whatever reason. They don't care. And, you know, I learned about this back in 88, 87, 86. Jack Hudson, wonderful guy. We were in college, and we'd have dinner quite often in the dorm cafeteria. And he was telling me all about everything, and he was like, oh, my gosh, what he was telling me back then? It says it isn't about socialism, it is about power. And the young people, and the, you know, Stalin said the unions and the workers are the foot soldiers to our movement. They don't care about them. These socialists get in power. The young people, 20s and 30s, who got them into power and campaign, all of a sudden like, whoa, you're a dictator. You're not a benevolent socialist.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, off with your head, bullet in the head in the back alley. The young people who fought for their leaders end up getting killed because they stand up to what, this is a fraud. This is not what you represented. And so it's spooky how well the powers that be play socialists. Spooky.
Mm-hmm. And the unions that were used all of a sudden wake up and they go, oh, hey, we were used.
Well, you think? Well, let's think about this. Let's go into the Stockton situation. I, a good friend is from Stockton. We're going to go there next week, by the way, California. You know, one of the bankruptcy of the Supreme Court. What happened? Well, it was a union city, the government workers. And the union said, you know what, we're going to get you a lot more salaries, join our union. Salaries go up. They come around again next year, go up higher, benefits, bennies. Okay, retirement package. Oh, you want to get on with the city of Stockton. And da-da-da-da-da. Okay, so what happens? Oh, my gosh, bankruptcy. We have made more of a commitment than we can ever fulfill. We created expectations we can't fulfill. We don't care. We got your money from your union dues. Use it for political purposes and turn the state into a, what's going on all over the state. We turned this into a social haven, and we got our people in power, and we're putting the middle finger to you.
Mm-hmm.
They never intended from the beginning to fulfill their promises because the ends justifies the means. And so the means were, you know, or the ends were get our people into power, take money from the unions, get our people in power. We don't care that the workers are going to get screwed, going to get cheated, going to have, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to go work at Walmart now because my retirement's not there. They didn't care for 20, 30 years, all these promises. They didn't care. They just used their money for political power from the union dues. They don't care.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I respect their strategic move, what the socialists did with the unions, incredibly strategic.
Mm-hmm.
For getting their end goal.
And here's the thing, they keep fooling people over and over again. They are able to fool people over and over again.
Because they can't see the end game.
Not just one country, not just two countries. I mean, look how many socialist and communist nations there are out there today now. And look at how badly they're doing. And the thing is, they ruin tourism, so nobody goes there anymore, so nobody brings back the information of how badly those people are living over there. I mean, who the heck goes to China? Who heck, Who goes to China and who goes to, I'll tell you what, if you go to China, you don't go there by yourself and rent a car and just drive off on your own. You will have, you're with a tour group, or you have a person to accommodate you or accompany you around like we did when we went there. You don't go anywhere by yourself. You don't just go running around China, taking in the sights, talking to the people. Can't do that. That's because they don't want the outside world to know what's really going on there.
Yeah. It's bottom line is corrupt people have risen to the power instead of helping people with the resources the way things should be, you know, through free flow and free market laissez-faire systems. We have people that are corrupt and setting things up for political favors to get reelected, not just this country, all over the world. You know, I'm sorry, I see it. Which congressman really lives for his congressional district and the people who elected him? Ron Paul was a good one of that. Newt Gingrich did good things by exposing what's going on in Congress and seeing cameras. There are good ones in there, but they're just... Tocqueville nailed it. He said, this is in the 1800s, in America there are men of principle in every party, but there is no party of principle.
Yeah, I remember talking about that.
Yeah, so anyway, you got to shut me off or I'm going to start ranting.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and proceed to shut things down for the evening. And, of course, we want to thank everyone for coming in tonight. And I look forward to seeing you again next week, 10 p.m. in November. I can't believe it's already going to be in November. But I will tell folks that I'm trying to find a calendar here, but not next Wednesday, but Wednesday the 13th. I will not be doing a show on the 13th of November. I will be out of town on a short vacation, going down to Florida to meet my brother and also to celebrate my 2-year wedding anniversary with my wife. So the 13th of November, there will not be a show. So apologize for that, folks, but every once in a while, this guy needs a little break from everything. So I'm going to take a little time that week. I'm going to be probably gone for about 4 days or so, and then of course I'll be back on the 20th of November with another show. So I will end tonight as I do every night, and that is with the song from Aubrey Ashburn. And you can listen to more of her music, of course, at www.aubreyashburn.com. Have a good night, folks. Take care, and looking forward to see you again. Good night.